Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Extra Rounds podcast. As always, my name is Mike.
I'm Elias.
And we are here to talk all things MMA at 30 minutes past the hour. We will always, man. 30 minutes past the hour, we will have Jared Brooks calling in to talk about his fight in Sao Paulo, Brazil, which did not go his way and is pretty controversial. One of a couple controversial talking points that came in on the day. So we'll talk to him. But it's also UFC 217 fight week, so we're going to talk about that. We'll talk about the other controversial moment from Sao Paulo and a few other things. So we always have Mike P. working the chat. So if you guys have any questions or thoughts or comments, feel free to chime in. And Mike will read the questions or comments to us, and we'll get you involved in the discussion. Yeah. But first, while we wait to get Mr. Jared Brooks on the phone, let's talk about your trip last weekend. To Matt, you went to Denver to go train with Matt Brown. He's fighting UFC Norfolk a week after UFC 217 in what could be his last fight. He's kind of seemed like he's gone back and forth on that now. So what was it like to go out there and train with him for a weekend?
It was really cool. It was really cool, Mike. I enjoyed it. We were just there for 3 or 4 days, but we dove right in. Shattered him at all of his trainings for those 3 or 4 days, got in there and trained with him and with his team. It's an interesting moment. Matt Brown, the last few interviews I've done with him over almost the last year, a lot has been looking towards the future, towards possibly coaching. He, of course, served as head coach for Jesse Taylor, who won the last season of Ultimate Fighter. He seemed to want to move in that direction, yet he's still an active fighter. He announced that it was going to be his last fight. But now, you know, he's not sure if it will be or not. But he's also moved on to different teams. So he went out to Denver from Ohio, specifically to do the Muscle Farm thing, to train at that with Team Elevation at that Muscle Farm facility. But they moved, or at least they're moving to Southern California. And so he kind of found himself in the midst of a lot of change. He went over to Factory X. He's doing his camp there with Mark Montoya as the head of it. Really great group of people there. And it's always fun, Mike, when you go to one of these elite camps and observe how they do things. It's cool to learn techniques. It's cool to see methodology as well, and some of the philosophy. And definitely have a couple takeaways about Matt Brown and also just about what these elite camps are doing. I did a quick live stream on my Facebook mentions while I was out there last week and about one of those takeaways, and that was how, as opposed to, I think, in the early days of modern MMA, when some of the most successful camps were known for brutal sparring and training with one another. I've had former Team Miletic members tell me, like, people will get knocked out every day in practice. Like, every day someone's getting knocked out. You hear similar stories from people that were at the old vaunted Shoot-a-Box. And certainly you can't argue with their results, right? Like, they produce champions, but they definitely hurt each other. A lot of these camps, though, the elite camps, I realized this when I went and sparred last year at AKA, when I've gone to Lausanne MMA, when I've gone to other places like Nick Diaz's academy and trained there, they don't kill each other in practice. You know, they might, or even going abroad to Tokyo or to the Netherlands, even in the Netherlands, I know they're known for hard sparring, at least where I went at Stefan Birkenpass's Kyoko gym. You know, they beat each other up at the legs a little bit and the body, but not to the head. And at Factory X, which is really a lot, consists of a lot of Muay Thai-based fighters like Chris Camozzi, his brother Brian Camozzi, they decidedly went pretty light and fast, at least in sparring with one another. They were creative, they were peppering each other, but they weren't beating each other's heads up in sparring. Matt Brown, too, he had some heated sparring, but it wasn't anything where people were taking liberties. It wasn't where people were digging into the head. They really, you realize now, modern MMA, I think a lot of the elite gyms are trending towards, let's make sure we focus on technique and timing and conditioning as opposed to beating each other's heads up and helping one another get to the fight intact. That was pretty cool.
I think that's interesting because that's not necessarily the perception of AKA, and you say that you train there.
Yeah, no, that we could – yeah, that's fun to talk about. So I feel like the negative perception of AKA is that's out there, the conventional wisdom, can. I feel like you could trace it almost 100% to Dana White's comments. I don't know that Dana White has ever gone there. I don't know that Dana White has ever trained there, you know. But he came out very critical when people had pulled out. But no, when I was there, I mean, heck, I was only there for a limited time ahead of UFC 199 for Luke Rockhold's camp. But yeah, I was. I mean, listen, if they were beating people up hard, they would have done it to me. But they did. I was in the room. Kane was there doing the team practice. Josh Thompson was there. Luke Rockhold, a lot of other pros. Aaron Pico at the time was there. And yeah, they dig into the legs and the body, but they did not go hard to the head. They just didn't. It was a very healthy all around training environment from what I saw. So yeah, when you're actually there, I think it's important to look at as opposed to just a kind of conventional wisdom that you get out there regarding some of these camps. So that was really cool. I also think Mac Brown is going to be an amazing head coach if he ever makes that transition full time. Over lunch after training, the last day I was there, just by me asking like a quick question, we ended up spawning to this like 45-minute conversation, which he was talking about nutrition, diet, and performance. And he really cares a lot about strength conditioning and nutrition, and in addition to the technical components of fighting. Like he's just really well organized. He's really smart. He has a lot of experience, obviously, and he hasn't done those decades plus of years of experience mindlessly. He's really assessed, analyzed, and he's got a really great mind. And he's young enough that even when he retires, he'll be able to get in there and move around with the guys and gals too. So he's gonna be a phenomenal coach.
I can't remember what we've talked about him coaching before, and I can't remember, but he was in a corner for an event, and I was there, and it was really fascinating.
I think it was Jesse Taylor, right? It was at the Ultimate Fighter finale recently. I think it was that one.
I couldn't remember what event it was.
Yeah, because you were telling him after the fight, he was talking to him.
Yeah, it's just really interesting to watch him, in somebody's corner. Like, it's a completely different experience and seeing him, like, give the feedback or whatnot. But, yeah. You see a lot of, I think more and more fighters, becoming successful coaches, Dwayne Ludwig, for example.
That's right.
But yeah. And talking about the injury thing, that's, I think it's also a point of evolution in the sport. Mm. You went from events so periodically to like three events a month, and people are taking it more. It makes me think of Dillashaw's comments about being an athlete versus Garbrandt being a fighter and like how you treat it and whatnot. So, interesting stuff to see there. And definitely
it was fun. It was a lot of fun. We'll have some stories coming out soon. Actually, this new app that's coming out, I think at the end of this month, SparMat is the one that sent me out there. So we'll have some. It's focused on like training and that type of stuff, human optimization. So we'll have some stuff there. I'll also do some writing for mixedmartialarts.com about Matt Brown heading up to it. But it was really cool. It's always fun, as you know, to go to some of these places and see how they do it. Get your butt kicked a little bit too. It was fun.
Did you get any indication of where he's on the retirement thing?
So I hadn't read any comments since he announced some weeks ago, hey, this is my last fight. I hadn't read any of the stuff of him kind of like not being undecided, but out there in person, yeah, I mean, it seems like he doesn't know, and it like doesn't know for certain that this will be the last one. And I think that's just him being honest. I think no one's ever certain. These athletes are never really certain, even after they retire, if they're going to stay retired. So I think right now he seems 100% focused on Diego Sanchez and where he'll live next, what he'll do next, if he'll fight again next. Chatted a little bit about it, and I don't know that he has any solid plans yet. And I think that's because maybe he's just most focused on Diego Sanchez. Like he's very much into this camp and into this fight. Like he's really excited. He's as excited, I think, for this fight as the fans seem to be excited for this fight. So he seems pretty freaking focused on Diego. I don't know if he knows what he's going to do afterwards.
I think a lot of it depends on the outcome too. If it's a war, do I want to go through that again?
Sure.
If it's quick, I'll entertain another one. Diego Sanchez, though, does not seem like an opponent where a fight's going to go quickly. It seems like it's going to be...
Not many people put him out quick, right?
Right. It could be something that's going to be brutal.
Yeah. Yeah. Win or lose, it often is brutal with Diego Sanchez.
So we'll see. What's going on in the chat, Mike?
Kyle wants to know, he says, looking forward to a great fight weekend. What non-title fight are you most looking forward to? Ooh.
So it's kind of a good segue from Matt Brown to UFC 217 this weekend before we circle back to Sao Paulo. But, man, what title fight are we most looking forward to?
Review the card now.
If you want the easy guess right now, or the easy one to say, would be Thompson Masvidal. I think.
Yeah, sure.
It's not necessarily the most creative answer, but I think
it's a good one.
It's an easy answer because you have a guy who fought in the last two title fights at welterweight, or not the last two, but his last two fights were in welterweight title fights.
Yep.
You have a guy in Jorge Masvidal who has been climbing the rankings really quickly and fought Damian Maia You know, and if he won, he would have fought for the title. Yeah. So, you know, there's a storyline that's compelling there. There's also a video that came out of him and Michael Bisping running into each other in the elevator lobby at the hotel.
Oh,
Masvidal?
Oh, what happened? Yeah. I didn't see it.
Just a lot of trash talking between the two.
No fighting, as they both promised.
No fighting, just trash talking. But it's, you know, so anyways, he's becoming a name out there. And, you know, he had a really funny tweet this week about Colby Covington and the whole ATT thing, like making a joke like AT&T, I'm switching to Metro PCS, kind of. I thought it was funny, at least. Maybe it wasn't for everybody. No, Jorge Masvidal. Because he, you know, because Colby Covington's comments caused some division in ATT, and, you know, I'm assuming they did, at least, what it seems like that anyways. So he was kind of having some fun in that regard, I guess. But James Vick, Joe Duffy, that's the main event on Fox Sports 1. That's really interesting. James Vick is a super underrated fighter, and Joe Duffy is kind of a guy who's got a little bit more clout behind him because of the Conor McGregor connection when he came in. But James Vick is a guy. He's also from Texas, so, you know, that makes him a favorite of mine. But he's you know, he's got a good record. I don't know off the top of my head what it is, but that's super another super entertaining fight. Ovince St. Preux stepping into fight on short notice against Corey Anderson. That's one.
That's an important fight at light heavyweight, too.
And I think if I wasn't going to go the easy route and go Thompson Masvidal, the one that I would pick the most, Mickey Gall, Randy Brown.
Yeah, that's a fun one.
Mickey Gall is just super entertaining. Yeah. The guy, he gets the sport. You know, he goes in, he has a plan, call outs, that thinks he really takes advantage of his thing there. But he's been away for a while. He's a local guy. Yeah. There's history with Randy Brown outside the cage, a personal history. So there's a lot of storylines in that fight too.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And I expect Mickey Gall to be super entertaining. So
yeah, I'm curious how much he's improved in this last year. You know, he's young. He could be twice as good as he used to be. Randy Brown's a great fighter as well. Yeah, that's a good one. I like Alexei Olenek and our friend of our show Curtis Blades are fighting. I didn't catch Curtis while I was out there in Denver. He's out there. He wasn't there the days I was there, but that's interesting. He's a great wrestler. Olenek is a really effective, unconventional grappler. They both got some power. As far as the big boys go, that could be a really interesting fight. And it's important. It's a pretty important fight to get to the next level, top 10 level, I think, for both guys.
Curtis Blades is such a fascinating person. He's this heavyweight, so he's huge in stature. As a heavyweight would be expected to be, but
he's a real heavyweight though.
But yeah, he's also like just a really nice guy. Like when he came in here, he was talking about coming back to train to help a high school student win the wrestling title.
Right.
Like, could you imagine being in high school and having a UFC fighter come
pretty
back?
Because cool.
he's keeping his word and commitment to helping you train. There's a lot of good Chicago fighters in that mold. You know, Curtis Blades, Jose Shorty Torres is another guy who comes back, even though he's a 2-weight Titan FC champion. He comes back and he puts in time and work with the kids at Combat Dough.
Clay Guida and Ricardo Lamas do that too. They don't talk about it much. Yeah. But yeah, it's
none of these guys, you know, and it's a slept on thing because none of these guys, Curtis Blades, Jose Shorty Torres, Guida, Lamas, none of them really broadcast it, but they do it and they put in that time and effort into their communities. And it's a real underrated MMA scene, I feel like, in Chicago. But
it's true.
He fought at UFC 213, if I'm remembering correctly. All the events are kind of blending together, but he was at Media Day and Curtis Blades as his brought a sci-fi book. And like, I just kind of noticed we were, I guess, waiting for stare downs or whatever afterwards. And I was talking to him about it. And, he's an avid reader.
That's cool.
It's just, he's a really intriguing person that I think, people need to get to know a little bit better. So
it's a good point.
Yeah. That's my tangent to answer your card. I think I gave like four fights, but
it's a good card.
It is a good card.
It's a really good card. Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, I feel like, you know, the Conor McGregor, it's like gets compared to that, but I mean, it's just as good as that card was.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You have five champions or former champions in six fighters in the main event.
Yeah.
You know?
It's pretty crazy.
We good in the chat?
All good in the chat. All right. I was just going to add that I love the OSP and Corey Anderson fight. Yeah, that's like, if I was asked, that's the fight I'm going with. Because both those guys, they're like on the brink, kind of what you guys were talking about in the heavyweight fight. It's like they're right there. And I think the winner of this gets a push into, not top five, but, you know, right there in the light heavyweight division, which needs more contenders.
Knockout or Von Peru choke?
Von Prue.
You think he's going Von Prue?
I'm going Von Prue.
That's it's always entertaining to watch him just because of that. It's just like so unexpected. It comes out of nowhere.
He really forces it to happen. He uses the cage in cool ways to make it happen because, you know, everyone knows like how not to get caught in it the basic way. Like, don't hold on to that headlock when you get side mounted. You won't get Von Flue choke. But he forces that issue and still gets
it
at a high level.
He just drives with his shoulder.
He does.
Into
it's pretty
it.
Awesome.
I mean, it's really entertaining. Mm. And you know, it's almost under the radar that he took this fight. And yeah. He's like just popped on. I think I was looking at when we were talking about this. I was looking at it. I thought originally the Anderson fight was on the Fight Pass prelims, and it looks like they because it's St. Preux, they moved it to the Fox Sports.
They should. That's a top 10 fight.
Yeah, and a good fight for free on Fox. So yeah,
that's awesome.
That's definitely one to watch. But let's since we're talking UFC 27, I had on our notes fighter to watch. We talked about fight. We're looking forward to. You mentioned it. We've talked about Curtis Blaydes. Is there a fighter to watch that you're? You've singled out?
Oh, so many. I would say the one of them that I'm most looking forward to seeing, and it's a general thing, is Stephen Thompson. He came so close to becoming world champion. One really thrilling fight, one that was just, you know, close fought. It'll be very interesting. He took some damage in both of them against Tyrone Woodley. It'll be very interesting to see how he looks against another top five guy coming off of those. Like, is he just as sharp? Is he, you know, is he improved? Is he not worse for wear for the couple big shots he took from Tyron, the champion? You know, is he just motivated? Maybe we can glean that. I'm really looking forward to seeing that fight overall, but I like Stephen Thompson a lot, and I think he's as good as anyone in the world at welterweight. Like, I think he could very easily be the champion right now, so it'll be very I'm really interested to see how he looks in this one.
It's interesting. He hasn't been in the cage since 2009.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's some, I guess, question marks about where he's at and how he's recovered and health and whatnot. Health is what originally delayed this bout when Masvidal called for it. So there's certainly a lot of question marks there.
How about you?
I mean, outside of the five fights I picked out to watch.
Right, I know.
I think George St. Pierre is the easy one to point to just because he's been gone for 4 years.
Totally.
And it's like, well, there's so many question marks about him. And I think there's, you try to prognosticate the future and what happens if he wins or what goes on. Or, you know, it's one of the hardest fights, I think, to pick just because you don't know anything about where he's at. You know, you know what he's saying, but he's not. You know, Rose Namajunas, I think, is a really intriguing one to watch. She's she's really come on as of late. I know two fights ago she lost to Carolina, and Carolina went on to fight Ioana in the next fight for the title. So
that was a super close fight.
Yeah, split decision loss. Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, I mean, you keep thinking about that Paige VanZant win. That was, like, such a gritty performance from both her and Paige. But I think that's really interesting to watch. You know, of course, all eyes would be on Johnny Hendricks to see how he's where he's at in his career. He's gone out to Jackson Wink to train, so there's that aspect. Of course, he's always struggled with weight, so, like, what's going on there? But anyways, you know, there's a lot of intriguing storylines there to watch. So I don't know. There's too many to pick here.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of, I guess, the fighters that are standing out to me on the card. But let's get into the title fights and break down. We were going to preview them and make picks.
Sure.
Anyway, so we got Michael Bisping and we got George St. Pierre. You know, as I said, I think it's hard to prognosticate. If gun to your head, you have to pick to win. Who are you picking?
Yeah, it really is hard. We chatted about this last week. I guess if I had to pick someone, I'd have to create this fantasy in my head that they're both be at their best. I don't know that that's going to be the case, but if they were, I'd like the style matchup with George. I don't think Bisping isn't the biggest middleweight in the world, so I think the size difference, although he'll have the advantage, could be mitigated a bit. So if George is just as sharp at his takedowns and his jab as he has ever been. And Michael Bisping is at his best. I like the style matchup with George. I think George can do enough on the feet and to get inside, take him down repeatedly. But I have no idea what he'll be. But yeah, if I had to choose, then I would create this contract in my head that they're both at their very best. And I think Michael Bisping is a great fighter. If they're both at their best, I think it's as far as close matchups go, a favorable one for George.
If they're both at their best, how much does the size difference play a factor? Like Bisping fought at light heavyweight.
Right. Right. Yeah, I think it's hard to tell. I think it plays into it, but George has such. So I think at his best, he has a type of blast double, and even clinch game with like upper body throw game that could negate it. I think he has the best. He's the best takedown artist in the history of MMA, in my view. So I think he can negate it a bit. And I think Michael Bisping has good takedown defense. I think he gets up really well. I think it's an advantage. I think size is an advantage. But although he's a good deal taller than George, he's not that much thicker. I would be surprised if he's physically a lot stronger. I think Michael Bisping fought at light heavyweight, and he's a strong guy. But I think his technique and his conditioning is what allowed him to do well there.
And even though he's won, you know, he beat Anderson Silva. He knocked out Michael Bisping, mm-hmm. Henderson. The Silva and the Henderson fights were both less than convincing.
Yeah, the Henderson was a horrible decision. Like, that was just a corrupt decision.
A lot of people
in my
had
view.
Henderson winning.
I mean, yeah.
A lot of people had Silva.
I thought that was a closer fight, and I scored it for Silva as well, for sure. He unambiguously knocked out the champion, Luke Rockhold, but sure. But yeah, I don't think, I mean, his, yeah, he's not untouchable, that's for sure.
Here's some stats. I did a crash course thing. Yeah. Here's some stats. 4 hours, 58 minutes, Michael Bisping spent in the cage, over an hour more than any other middleweight.
Mm.
That includes Silva.
Yeah.
Of course, part of that's your capability
people.
To finish.
Yeah.
5 hours and 28 minutes, total time George St. Pierre spent in the UFC cage, 30 minutes more than Bisping and an hour and a half more than any other welterweight.
It's amazing.
Michael Bisping holds the division record for significant strikes landed, and it's 550 between him and second place. These are all via fight metric. George St. Pierre has the most significant strikes landed in welterweight division history. He also has the record for most strikes landed in welterweight division history. I think this might be the stat that shows George St. Pierre might be the favorite to win. Bisping's threat is boxing, his boxing. And George St. Pierre has a 73% significant strike defended stat. Now, I know stats aren't like cool to get all into and stuff, but when you're looking at some of these things, like with two great guys like this,
yeah.
I think sometimes you have to get in there a little bit to like.
No, it's fun too. The strikes defended is a motherfucker, though. I think that I don't even know how they would constitute that. That would be very interesting to see how they assess that. But yeah, he's got great defense for sure. He, you know, up until the last few fights of his career, he didn't take that much damage.
He also, George St. Pierre, that is, has 87 total takedowns. That's a welterweight record. It's also more than twice the record for takedowns landed in the middleweight division.
Wow, who has that record?
I don't remember off the top of my head.
Interesting.
So interesting.
Yeah, George's blast double is crazy.
But that's kind of like his thing. And of course, Bisping, you know, knows it's coming, and he's, you know, been critical about him, and George St. Pierre's gone out there and say Michael Bisping's terrified of my wrestling, so you know it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, it will be.
You know, the other thing I think is really interesting is George St. Pierre's talked so much about trying to add weight but doing it the right way. He's talked about people trying to add weight and doing it the wrong way and it being like you have bags on you. So he's been trying to put on weight the right way, so it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out.
It will be. There was some weird criticism of the way his body looked. I thought that was absurd. They're like, oh, he's looking soft. Joe Rogan said he's looking soft. I think that's absurd. I mean, he's 15 pounds heavier, so he's going to be bigger, but he's
not going to be the like 0% body.
Yeah, I mean, he's what you would think he would look like. Yeah, in my view. And he had, he had abs. I'm not sure what they're talking about. But anyway, yeah.
But anyways, 5 minutes before Jared Brooks calls in, let's talk about a little Cody Garbrandt, TJ Dillashaw. How do you see this fight going?
Man, I don't know who to pick in this one. I will say this. Cody Garbrandt beat Dominic Cruz more decisively than even TJ Dillashaw, who thought he beat deserved to get the win against Dominic Cruz, you know, could conceivably, said he did. So it's tough. I also, who knows? I mean, Cody Garbrandt showed a completely like whole nother set of gears in that Dominic Cruz fight. Technique wise, conditioning wise, we didn't know what that he could do that over five rounds. We just didn't. We knew he was an amazing fighter. He was knocking people out, and maybe he would knock out Cruz. But to do what he did there showed a whole nother gear. It's been a minute since he's fought, so it's no real telling of what he's going to look like there. There's his camp has gone through all sorts of changes. Justin Buchholz just announced that he's not the head coach there. Like I don't know. I don't know who's been his main coach. I don't know how his body is. Same with TJ Dillashaw. TJ Dillashaw is in Southern California now. He was in Denver before. Like he has all sorts of training changes. He's training with good people. But yeah, I don't know. I think if they're both at their best, I think it's really, really tough. I think TJ Dillashaw might be a little bit of a better wrestler than Dominic Cruz. So maybe if he's committed to looking for takedowns with the right game plan, he can do it. If I had to choose at their best against a common opponent, Cody Garbrandt looked even better than TJ Dillashaw did. Although there's no saying that that's a good measuring stick for how they'll fight. It's tough for me to say. I feel like the takedown might be there for TJ more than it was for Dominic, but I don't know. What do you think?
I'm leaning towards Cody. He's just younger, you know. I think there's a little bit of a less wear.
Sure.
Not that it necessarily really matters in a situation like this, but
it could.
You know, it could. Right. But the other thing is, like, they both come from wrestling backgrounds. TJ Dillashaw wrestled in college. Cody Garbrandt was won the state championship as a wrestler as a freshman in high school in Ohio, which is a state that has great wrestler lineage there. So I think he could have wrestled in college, but he didn't. When you look at the wrestling, I think it might be a little bit of like a toss up. Neither one of them have made it to where they are by relying on their wrestling. Cody Garbrandt uses his wrestling to defend the takedown and keep, I think that's primarily how he uses his wrestling background, is to keep it on the feet because he's got heavy hands, and he's been boxing since he was like 4 or 5 years old. So whereas Garbrandt's kind of his striking's evolved since he's gotten into MMA, first with Team Alpha Male and Dwayne Ludwig. So I mean, as great as he is, he also has that similar style to Dominic Cruz. When they fought, everybody was like, Dillashaw is basically done what Dominic Cruz was doing in his next step in the evolution. So a lot of people compare their styles as being similar, the fluid style, stance switching style. So I want to give it to Garbrandt just because I think if Cruz and Dillashaw are similar and Garbrandt was able to get by Cruz with ease, I mean, even if he has a harder time with Dillashaw, sure, like he should still get by.
I agree.
But, you know, the wrestling, I think, is a big factor too. Like, if Dillashaw can get it to the ground, maybe he has an advantage there. But, you know, Garbrandt's not an easy guy to get to the ground. So I think I was looking at it. I think actually in the bantamweight division, Dillashaw holds the record at 12 for submission attempts. So that's kind of like a distinguishing stat. But like if you look at percent significant strikes defended, like Cody Garbrandt's 5th on the list in the division. Dillashaw's 9th. Dillashaw, I think, holds the record for significant strikes and total strikes landed in the bantamweight division, but Cody Garbrandt owns the record for total knockdowns landed. Of course,
a lot of knockdowns.
More than half of them came during the Dominic Cruz fight.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, it's interesting. But, you know, like, there was that GIF going around that, like, Flow Combat tweeted out that was on Reddit of all Cody Garbrandt's knockdowns.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it's impressive
it's
to say
cool.
the least. So.
Yeah, it really is.
And I feel like Garbrandt, he takes, I think a lot of people view him as a hothead, and I think it's just how he expresses himself.
Right.
But I think he's actually calmer under the surface.
Evidently, you showed real calm and poise in that fight.
And I think that's what happened with Cruz. Like Cruz was trying to get in his head, and you wondered if he was going to be able to separate that too, and he did.
Yeah.
You know, I thought the same thing like Conor McGregor going into 202 once the water bottle throwing happened. I was like, Diaz has gotten in McGregor's head. He's not going to stick to the game plan. And like once the fight started, he was all about, you know, he stuck to it. So
I was disciplined.
I kind of see, but I also think that kind of helps as a motivational thing for Garbrandt, which he has here. So it's 2:30 or 3:30 on the East Coast. Let me see if we can get Jared Brooks on the line before we try to talk a little Rose Namajunas Joanna champion.
I'm sorry, say that again.
I'm just saying we get Jared on the line before talk a little Rose and you want a champion. to round out UFC 217 preview.
So it doesn't, full disclosure, so it doesn't look like I was being a jerk. I was actually reading a message from Mike while Mike was talking to me. So when I didn't hear Mike, it's because I was reading another message from Mike.
These are lies. Hey, Jared, how are you?
Hey, what up, man? What's up?
Not much. So we wanted to start off talking about UFC Sao Paulo. You know, I watched the fight again this morning, and I still don't see how two judges gave it to him. How have you kind of come to terms with this?
I'm cool with it, man. I'm working out right now.
Just easiest to move on and kind of put it behind you?
Yeah. It's all right, man. Shit happens. It's the fight game. I don't mean I ain't going to be on the top soon.
There's kind of always been a shroud of controversy for fighters outside Brazil coming to fight in Brazil. Kelvin Gastelum recently, for different reasons, said he wasn't going to fight in Brazil ever again. Has that kind of been something you've thought about?
You know what? Wherever they put me, I'm going to try to win. If I don't get the win, it's whatever. But at the same time, I'm past it, man. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to win. Ready to win a world title here soon. Fuck everybody that doubts. I'm going in to win.
You know, you seem to be dealing with the mentally super well. This is Elias, by the way. Thanks for being on the show, Jared. You know, a lot of guests we've had on in the past, they were, you know, undefeated. They talked about, you know, at moments when they were undefeated, putting a lot of pressure on themselves to, like, stay undefeated. That zero is a big thing to them. Was that not a big thing to you in your head once you reached the UFC, you know, thinking, oh, I've got to stay undefeated? It sounds like you're more focused on the larger goal of becoming world champion at one point. Was it difficult for you at any point to say, oh my gosh, I'm not undefeated anymore, or not really?
Well, everybody wants to be Floyd Mayweather. You know what I'm saying? Everybody wants to have that no losses on your record, but hey, guess what, bud? This is MMA. This ain't boxing.
I want to move forward in a second, but I am curious. So you've had so far two split decisions in the UFC. Take our listeners as well, please, to like that moment that when you're sitting there, you're waiting decisions, you hear, okay, one judge has it this way, another judge has it that way, and you're waiting for that the third judge's decision to come in. What's going on in your head at that time? Is it as stressful as it seems watching?
Dude, I mean, I thought I won it. Sure. I thought, you know, the first judge, I was like, oh, 30-27. I was like, all right, this is going to be a unanimous decision. And then I heard Davison's name. I was like, all right, so this is kind of messed up. I was like, but they're going to give me the win. And then, nope. I was like, all right, this is cool. Just went in the back. I was like, you know, I was down on myself for like 5 minutes, and I got the fuck over it.
We saw when you were watching the fight, you were talking to McMaynard before the decision was getting read. What were you saying to him?
I was like, you think I won that fight? And he was just like, yeah.
Did you talk to anybody in the UFC after the fight, after the decision was read?
Yeah, I talked to Jose Aldo. I passed him, and he was just like, oh, man, you got fucked. I was like, yeah. Then I talked to the WEC, the old WEC president that's still working with the UFC.
Yeah, Reed Harris, yeah.
Yeah, Reed Harris. I can't believe I don't know his name. but he came up and he was just like, hey, man, yeah, you got fucked. And he was like, if it makes you feel better, the Red Hot Chili Peppers lead singer said that you got fucked. And I was like,
Anthony Kiedis.
I was like, that ain't making my pocket fatter, bro.
Yeah, that's a tough thing. Like, you know, you don't, the purses you guys get are split win and loss, you know, so you know, even if you did beat someone in actuality, you still got to go home with half of that. I mean, does that...
Yeah, man. I'm always something that grows with longevity, you know what I'm saying? And I think that's why, like, people like Jose Torres is watching me right now. He thinks he's going to be in the UFC, and I don't think he's going to get there. I think Gleitson MMA is going to beat his ass.
Yeah, so you're talking about Jose Shorty Torres, another, like yourself, another friend of the show. He's been on here multiple times. For those that don't know, he's talking about Torres is a two division champion. He's definitely on the cusp of getting the UFC, but it sounds like you don't think so. You don't think he's going to make it there? You think when he gets there, you're waiting for him?
Oh, I think that's what's going to happen for sure.
What's that?
Jose and I are going to be fighting. I was like, all right, let's go.
What's the history there?
He's exciting. I'm exciting. I mean, I think we're the only two 125-pounders in the division that can actually get it. You know what I'm saying? So
there's no animosity there. There's a little edge. There's a little edge in there, Jared. Do you guys have any trash talk between you?
We're going to fight. So I'm like, all right. If he's starting stuff with me and he's already a name, then I'm a name, then we're going to end up fighting. So if he wants to start a war, I'll start a war.
You know, there's so much, I think, in the UFC right now or in MMA in general, is, you know, fighters kind of promoting themselves and kind of whether there's real animosity or just kind of getting talk going on social media. Is that kind of an element here? It's like, you know, that you guys will meet at some point in the future. You just want to kind of keep that conversation building out there for the fans.
Yeah, because, I mean, at the end of the day, I feel like we're going to be the 25-pounders running shit after Demetrius leaves. So, Justin Scoggins and Jared Scoggins.
That was a pretty good argument for that. I it would be hard to disagree with that. These guys and Scoggins brothers that you were saying, yeah, they do seem like the future. Not that Demetrius is wanting to go anywhere himself, but, yeah, I mean, these young
Demetrius is going to lose everything in the next year and a half.
Yeah?
All of us pouring in, he's going to lose everything.
Because of you guys coming up, or you think just, you know, his next fight, even if it's not against guys like you?
I mean, I don't know about that. I mean, he could lose against anybody, but Demetrius is pound for pound one of the best, but I've seen Ray Borg get destroyed before too, you know what I'm saying?
You don't put too much stock in that last one then.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
A lot of people think Sergio Pettis and Henry Cejudo, the winner of that fight, gets the next shot. Who do you think wins that fight?
Well, I want to see if Henry shows up. I messaged Mick Maynard already, and I was like, I don't think Henry might even show up. He just fucking messed up his foot. He thinks that he's all hurt, and I know how that goes before a fight. So,
did you message him and say, like, you're ready for that one to fill in if he doesn't?
I told him I'm on wait. I'm ready to go.
That's awesome.
Is that just part of, you know, how you always are looking to get back into the cage, or is it just more so because of the way that this last fight ended?
Dude, I've always bumped up to wrestle. I've bumped up to fight. I mean, all these guys that are cutting weight, they end up being pussies by the way it cut in, and then they're kind of normal during the fight. I'd rather be small and ready to fight at any time.
And when you're in there, do you feel like that there is a strength advantage to these guys? You're able to overcome it, or do you think there really isn't a strength advantage when these guys that cut a lot of weight?
No, they get tired real quick. I mean, I get tired just trying to handle them, you know what I'm saying? But they get tired real quick. And, I mean, I think I'm ready for more rounds, you know what I'm saying? In Brazil, it was kind of crazy. The guy, Marcus Gomes or something like that, you know who he is?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's a beast. He went out there and killed shit. And that was a crazy, weird first experience being after him.
Did, like, mentally, was it
crowd, that Brazilian crowd? I think they tone it down for UFC viewers to see, because that Brazilian crowd is fucking loud.
Is it the loudest by far you've ever been around?
Yeah,
that's crazy. And what is that like? Does that amp you up, Jared? Does it like take you a second to
It makes me think you gotta go. Huh. Which I think that the Brazilian style. I mean, I can understand why people in Brazil. Like more thinking about it, because like Covington, at first I was like, yeah, he's kind of right, but at the same time it's kind of messed up that he said that, because all those guys have to work probably three times as hard to try to get into the UFC.
The Brazilian fighters.
They have to go through a lot of animosity. A lot of them came from the bottom of the bottom, you know.
That's an interesting point. Yeah, you're talking about Brazilian fighters. Yeah.
Yeah, the reason why the fans are probably like that is because, like, oh, well, you don't see this off the street, you know, too many times.
It's a good point. Or just the UFC being there, too, right? Like, in America, we get a bunch of cards, but they get extra hype when they go down to Brazil, even though it's a growing market. It's interesting. So where are you training out of right now? Are you like, back home at your local gym, or where are you getting in your work right now? You said you were just training today.
Oh, man. I'm just at home with one of my friends, Devin Jackson. Nice. I think he's going to be an upfront tier at 135 here in the next, like, few years, too. The dude's nasty. I mean, he's 9-0 as an amateur. Whoa. He's going to Las Vegas. He's going to try to win $100,000 in a four-fight tournament.
The Copa Combate?
Yeah.
Ah, very cool. Oh, that's awesome. So how much do you...
Yeah, his name is Devin Jackson, by the way. He's a beast.
tell them we'll have him on the show. I'd love to chat with him as well, especially after that tournament he's doing. That'll be cool. How much do you spar when you don't have a fight signed? Do you just kind of do like drilling and pad work and grappling, or do you spar outside of when you have a fight signed, an actual like quote unquote in camp?
You know, I spar a lot, like boxing and stuff like that. I just gotta clean it up on the kickboxing and go in there. I mean, there's a lot of things to work on. I'm young in the game, but with longevity, I just come in and murder shit, just like I did in wrestling.
Mentally, do you feel like after going through an amateur wrestling career that like you weren't so daunted by MMA? Because that's what I had heard from a lot of elite wrestlers, is that even though when they transferred over, Dan Henderson told us this, Randy Couture, that even though you're getting punched, they never felt as much pressure walking to the cage as they did and maybe even like state tournament in high school, because wrestling matters so much to the wrestling community.
I mean, if you want to bring it to that point, it's kind of like, you know, Dan Henderson, he's a three-time Pride champion. Like, that's crazy as hell. Got Randy Couture, you know, he's a champion. Sometimes you just can't fucking listen to yourself. You gotta go out there and just do it.
That's awesome. Did you take to MMA from the get-go? Some wrestlers love it, and some others they have to kind of, you know, get used to it. Anyone coming from any other particular style, did you take to it, the freedom of it, right away, Jared?
Yeah, pretty much. I've been fighting since I was young. My whole family's just been fighters, so fighting is just pretty much me.
That's cool.
All I do is fighting.
So even when you were a wrestler, you were in your heart, you were in your mind, you were still fighting.
Yeah, my dad handed me a box when me and my brother were really young, and he had a gi in there, and he had a wrestling singlet. My brother picked wrestling singlet, I picked the gi, so I was like, all right.
That's awesome.
You're from Detroit, if I remember correctly, right?
Yeah.
We've heard
Kevin. No, I'm from Warsaw, Indiana, actually. That's where I'm originally from, but I live in Detroit right now.
Gotcha. What was that like? Is that, you know, we heard a lot of stories about people, you know, Cody Garbrandt, for example, Kevin Lee recently talked about, you know, always fighting as a kid. Did you kind of have the same route?
Yeah, I mean, and we had a wrestling mat in our garage, and every Monday night, my brother and I would host kids to just come over and beat the shit out of each other. They could be pussies that wanted to fight pussies, or badasses that wanted to fight pussies, or badasses fighting badasses.
What is it? Was the differentiation things bare knuckles and gloves, or what was the?
No. My brother and I watched UFC and boxing, dude. We had boxing gloves, UFC gloves. Anybody that wanted to use them, we could go bare knuckle too. You know.
Did you have to hide that from your folks, or is it like, hey, you know, it's all good?
Oh, our neighbors were wrestling friends, so they didn't really...
That's phenomenal.
We just had him sign a paper, dude. I wanted to be a promoter since I was younger, also.
No kidding.
No, wait. How old were you when you're having kids sign a waiver before fighting in your garage?
That's awesome.
Like fifth grade, sixth grade.
That's so awesome.
This is like genius level.
Yeah, it's
like
you're a smart young
prodigy,
man.
Like promoter, like, you know, if Steve Jobs was a prodigy for starting Apple in his garage, like this is like the equivalent of that,
right,
for MMA.
That's awesome.
Well, that's what I wanted. That's what I wanted to do, and it's always been in my mind. It's always been in my mind to be a world champion too. So,
You got a good chance of doing both. Then it seems like that's awesome.
Yeah, I really want to go out and show everybody what I've actually done, and it's hard to get your story out. Anybody can go out and show people how to fight, but if you get your story out, also it'll give you a lot more supporters, and then you can go out and pretty much do anything, man. The power of fans is the power of magic, and that's why, I mean, Conor McGregor, look at him.
So you put you're putting a big effort, you're putting a lot of attention on trying to build that relationship with your fans to kind of build that grassroots support for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's how you get up in the game. I think the more supporters and the more fans that you have, like putting energy on you for that fight, and you also putting energy into that fight.
You've had some like fights fall out. I think you're supposed to fight Ian McCall in your debut. That fell out. Has some of those kind of things, when something like that happens, has it helped you or has it hurt you in regards of trying to build that relationship with the fans?
I'm going to get big fights anyway. It really doesn't matter. I'm going to go out, especially when I win. You guys are going to see some good trash talk. And I'm going to go out there and pretty much Nate Diaz the crowd. That's what you got to do.
Like Elite XC Diaz or?
Any kind of Diaz. Any kind of Diaz, McGregor, anybody that's a genius in marketing. I'm not following anything. Like, I'm going to have a different reaction. But who are those guys, you know, supposed to look up to? I got to look up to the king of the game, and maybe I can be the king of the game.
What's a part of your story that you want to get out there, or you want people to know?
I mean, I like fighting, period. I've just been involved with fighting my whole life. My dad's been involved with fighting his whole life. His dad's been fighting his whole life. So, I mean,
that's a
I've just had generations of fighting in my life. My brother, he's a badass too. He was supposed to be just like me pretty much, but he picked the wrestling route, and he's very smart and intellectual. So, I mean, I've seen Justin, and if my brother went into the UFC, man, it'd be pretty bad for other 125 pounders going in there, because he's a badass.
Fascinating.
We gotta have you come visit us in Chicago sometime, man. Have you in studio, and maybe we can do some video stuff too with on the mats, man. You're not too far away, or we gotta get up to Detroit, one of the two. But it's been awesome having you on, brother.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it, guys, and hopefully you guys will see me fight in the next few months. Hopefully it's like a month.
I imagine. That'd be awesome. Imagine UFC 218 is what you're hoping for.
That's what I really want. Sergio Pettis. Sergio Pettis kind of comes from the same background. I think that Sergio is a very good fight for me. Somebody that I can get very excited about, especially fighting in my home state. So going out in Brazil a month before and then going to Detroit a month later and fighting, that'd be awesome.
All right. Everybody, you heard it. Get on Twitter at McMaynard and Sean Shelby and help get Jared on UFC 218 in Detroit in December.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care, brother.
Yep. You guys have a good one.
Thanks. You as well. Wow, that's fun talking to that kid. We got to have him on whenever he wants.
What a fascinating guy. I think it's really interesting listening to his story. That's one of the greatest things about, you know, You get bits and pieces, like he was saying, we're trying to get his story out. Mm-hmm. You get bits and pieces, but to hear a fighter talk about their background a little bit more,
yeah,
you know, sheds a light that you don't always get to see. You know, I'm incredibly fascinated by the fact that he was running a promotion in his neighborhood in his garage.
You gotta write about that. That's,
you know,
so cool.
Like, we had in our basement, like, my dad had a pair of boxing gloves or a couple pairs of boxing gloves, and like, we'd go down and like wail on each other for fun, like. But we weren't signing waivers, and like neighbors weren't showing up to watch, and it wasn't like every week on Sunday night or something.
Very
like,
well organized.
That's fascinating that a kid was thinking that way.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
You know, and it really sheds a lot of insight into the fighter he's become today, and why it means so much. You know, you talk about people like who love a thing. You know, musicians, like they get into playing an instrument or music when they're young, and it's just like this lifelong like relationship. And it sounds like that's fighting with him. You know, he's from day one, he talked about watching UFC and boxing with his family to just kind of like gravitate and latch onto it, and like that's like his vocation and his life mission. Super, super fascinating. That was a great talk.
Yeah, it was really fun. I'm glad you got him on.
Yeah, we're gonna have to have him on more often to, you know, kind of chip away at the story and hear him.
Absolutely.
Hear the next chapter.
Absolutely, we got to coax him down here. He's not too far, man. You got to get him to Chicago, do some fun stuff here.
Maybe extra rounds road trip.
Yeah. Oh man, I'm down, bro. I'm down. That'll be a lot of fun. We can do some cool things up there. As long as we don't have him in, or as long as we do have him and Shorty Torres in studio at the same time, that'll be fun.
I don't know if security's in the budget, but that would be intriguing. We wouldn't even be on the show; it'd just be co-hosts.
It's, yeah, that's
like,
right.
It's like when they do the UFC media conference calls, and like it just become like the reporters just stand there and listen to people them talk to each other on the phone,
yeah,
and like
be great.
Every now and then gets in a question. That's what it'd be like.
Be a good problem to have.
We'd be there. What were your thoughts, Mike P? Don't want people to. Oh, hold on. There you go.
I love it. That's the Jared Brooks I know and I've talked to. Was honestly expecting more heat towards Shorty Torres, especially after he said he was, you know, moving on from his fight in Brazil. So I think it was great. But I definitely want to see those two fight.
Yeah, it should be happening sooner rather than later. It's still kind of baffling that Jose Shorty Torres is a two-way champion who's defending belts in Titan, and he hasn't been signed by the UFC yet. You know, he brought up a lot of good young names in the flyweight division, which makes the whole future of the division debate that has happened baffling. Like, Cejudo is still young. Pettis is young. You got Jared Brooks. A guy like Jose Shorty Torres is out there. There's Scoggins. Mm-hmm. There's all sorts of names. So it was it's interesting. It's definitely, you know, don't sleep on the flyweight division. There's things going on there.
Absolutely.
Well, let's before we wrap up, let's touch on the one UFC title fight that we didn't make a pick
on. Yeah.
Joanna versus Namajunas. Who are you picking?
I don't have a particular reason to go against the champion, so I'll pick Joanna. But I don't have any like level of certainty in that pick. I think it's a very interesting. It's gonna be a very interesting fight. I'm really curious to see how well Rose can get in on the hips and legs of Joanna, and she can get her to the ground, and what she can do there. Really interested to see. I mean, I love Joanna Jędrzejczyk as a fighter, and just, you know, as a public persona, she's very interesting. She is, however, like Ronda Rousey, like Michael Jordan, like Muhammad Ali, just a cruel bully competitively. And so she's put herself squarely in the villain's role here by talking about mental health issues against with Rose. Rose's family has a lot, a history of mental health issues that she's talking about. And she says, you know, this is not trash talk to me. This is not a game. This is not a joke. This is dead serious. And Rose, like always, has looked dead serious in all the pre-fight stare-down stuff. You know, there's a lot of theater to what Joanna does. There's like none to what, no intentional artifice.
Same expression.
All the time. She's ready to fight. I think that's going to be a phenomenal fight. I don't think either woman, whoever wins, neither one of them is going to go down unless they get taken out. Like, I think it's going to be a lot of doggedness in that fight.
That's how a lot of Joanna's fights have gone lately.
Yeah.
You know, she's fought to decision against Carolina, against Claudia, Jessica, definitely. Yeah. But she's also faced people like Jessica Andrade who were supposed to take her down. And,
right.
You know, Rose has that ability, but that hasn't been something that's stopped Joanna yet.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Hard to go against Joanna, even though I'm really compelled in Rose's story. I'm not a big fan of Joanna using the mentally unstable as kind of a
absolutely
verbal
not
weapon.
Me neither.
You know, I wasn't a fan of Daniel Cormier using Jon Jones' attempts at sobriety as a weapon either. You know,
sure.
I mean, it's the fight game, and people will say everything's off limits, but at the same time, it's like, at a certain level, it's like it's cheap.
It's you people. Know what I mean? It's real
like
world.
If it was wrestling, it'd be cheap heat. Like, you don't need. If you need that for the trash talk, like, you're forcing it.
Yeah.
You know, you're clearly not creative enough. Like Conor McGregor, when he showed up, like, wearing that CJ Watson throwback Warriors jersey, like, that's some next level. You know what I mean? Like, okay, you worked hard for that. Like,
right.
You had to figure that out. You had
right.
to, like, find the jersey from God knows where. Like, you couldn't just go online and order, like, a LeBron jersey right now.
Right.
You know, so.
No, that's true.
I know people say, like, it's fighting and everything's off limits or is fair game. But it's also, you know.
I don't think everything is fair
like,
game.
Think about Jared Brooks talking about marketing and, like,
right.
trying to connect with your fans. Like,
sure.
You're marginalizing potential fans.
No, I think that's that. Right. I think the truly cruel competitors like that, I don't think they're trying to gain fans. I think they're really trying to get a mental advantage. Like, I think they're being cruel because she really thinks it will really destabilize someone mentally. Like, and they put that first. They're ruthless at that point. They're not trying to get fans. They're trying to really affect the fight by starting with the mind. And I think they make peace with the fact that they're cruel in that way. You know, like Michael Jordan kept his stuff, you know, more secret a lot, like punching teammates or the trash talk. You know, everything wasn't mic'd up so well back then. He wasn't trying to use it as his public face, but he cared about all that. Even him, who was so concerned with licensing his name and being bland outside of the off the court, that was all secondary to the win. So, yeah, I think that's nonsense when people say everything's fair game. Well, I don't know what that means. It doesn't make it right. It doesn't excuse it. But I think competitors who are cruel that way, I think they make peace with it. I don't think it excuses it, but they don't care. They're not trying to make fans. They're like, no, I do think there's this thing with Rose, and I do want her to, like, I want her world to crumble a little bit right before I fight her because I want to beat her.
Yeah.
It doesn't excuse it, but it's important to realize, like, that cruelty is intentional, I think.
Well, that brings us to the end of our show. I see Kiernan asking for a shout out. So there's your shout out in the chat.
What's up?
It looks like somebody else, Tommy, is also a Warsaw, Indiana guy, like Jared Brooks. He's in the chat. So we got some of that going on. So,
Warsaw represent, man.
Thank you for everyone talking about or watching the show and commenting and participating in it. It was great to kind of see the comments going on there. Thank you for checking it out. Make sure to follow Jared Brooks on Twitter at @_monkeygod. That's
can I ask him about that nickname next time? I forgot to ask him about that.
Well, now we got a question for next time.
Yeah,
one of the best nicknames in you know, like, everybody's like, you know, the Basher, the Destroyer, or something. It's like, that's a unique nickname. So next time. But thank you everyone for checking it out. Let's talk about what we got coming this week. Mike, what do you got coming tomorrow night?
Tomorrow I'm just on remote broadcast, Chasers in Niles, so we'll be there. Don't have a guest.
Chicago.
Yeah, if you're in Chicago. Don't have really a guest list. We're just kind of getting the three of us together and really going to break down this card top to bottom. So, yeah, Chasers in Niles, right outside Chicago, 6 to 9 p.m.
If you can't get enough UFC 217 talk, check it out. What's coming for you?
Still working on this regulatory piece with weigh-ins and doing a couple things, a couple live streams, I think, on my Facebook page. What the hell is it? I think it's just Elias Cepeda writing. But other than that, I'm doing a bunch of stuff to prepare the Matt Brown material before that fight, November 11th. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if the underground, if mixedmartialarts.com wants me to write up something from this past interview. So if you caught the tail end of this, you want to hear a little bit more about that might be coming. That was pretty cool. The child promoter angle was pretty awesome. That might be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Calling out Pettis.
It's, you know, another thing, we talked about this with Mickey Gall, but you got to know what you want.
Yeah.
And you got to go, like, that's what part of what makes Mickey go, like, Jared Brooks has a little bit of that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's already put it behind him. He's moving on to the next thing, and he's got a vision.
That's awesome.
So normal Thursday column coming from me, a little crash course in UFC 217. So again, if you're not overwhelmed with UFC 217 stuff, thank you for everyone who took the time to check out the show. We appreciate it. You can find this just about anywhere. You can find it at Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Blog Talk Radio. We'll also upload the interview with Jared to YouTube later, so you can check that out. And make sure to follow us all on social media. We got our Twitter handles down there, and Mike P's is MP2310.
Yep.
Man, look at that skill. That wasn't even written down. Thank you everyone for checking out. We'll see you next week.